A new Scottish film called Morven Callor gives new meaning to the term soundtrack. The movie follows a quiet young woman who transforms her life after the death of her boyfriend. She spends much of the film cocooned with her Walkman, giving the viewer more access to what goes on in her headphones than what goes on in her head. NPR's Susan Stone reports.
The first 5 minutes of Morven Callor are really quiet. You won't hear dialogue or the swell of strings. But you will hear a hand brushing against skin, the click of computer keys, the sound of coins on a table. There's a reason, says director Lynn Ramsey.
I use sound a bit like a camera. It's like a focus on certain elements that I really want people to hear.
Ramsey's film opens on two young lovers embracing in the pulsing glow of Christmas lights. Slowly, we see that the male half of the couple is dead. His lover Morven, played by Samantha Morton, isn't sure what to do. She reads a suicide note, gets dressed, apologizes as she takes some money from the dead man's pocket, and goes out to party, answering vaguely but truthfully when asked where her writer boyfriend is.
What have you done with Dostoevsky tonight?
He's at home.
I don't know.
In the kitchen.
And that's where he stays for several days, blocking the path to the stove. Her boyfriend is left behind a bank card, an unpublished novel, and a cassette tape. Morven uses these tools to refashion her life as she mourns and moves on. Morven plays the mixtape over and over again. Filmmaker Lynn Ramsey lets us hear it from inside and outside her headphones.
I wanted it to use the music in a way that you could, you know, feel very intimate with the character, kind of go inside their head somewhat. So use this kind of simple technique, which is you hear the Walkman sound and it very, very slowly goes into a full sound. So you kind of feel like you're going through this dream at times.
Lynn Ramsey says the tape serves as a constant reminder for Morven of the man who has left her behind.
I kind of like to think of it as like a letter to her, you know. So I kind of thought about who is this guy, you know. I kind of based him, you know, my idea of the boyfriend was really Alan Warner, the writer of the book, you know. A kind of music buff, academic, you know, older than her, more educated. So I kind of thought about his musical taste.
This Memento Mori is made up of experimental music from the German group Can, Dreamy Electronica from Stereolab, and Cowboy Muzak from Lee Hazelwood.
Some velvet morning when I'm straight, I'm gonna open up your gate.
Music provided an important structure for Alan Warner when he was writing the book on which the film is based. Mixtape track listings and song titles punctuate Warner's novel.
I was desperate to find a kind of structure where I could mention music that was important to me. And Morven being a character who doesn't talk a lot, obviously music kind of very much fills those holes. And she uses this cassette in her ears all the time to basically, maybe color the world in a way like sunglasses do or something.
The book is an almost colorless, unemotional monologue that details Morven's every move, from how she paints her nails, to the list of vegetables she stocks at her mindless supermarket job, to how she disposes of her boyfriend's body.
It was like a police interview almost, you know. But I thought it was great, but I felt like we could make the film, you know, without that monologue and for it to still work and have actually be closer to the character in some way than if I'd use voiceover to explain her.
The film never really explains Morven's motivations. Instead, Ramsey decided to let carefully crafted images generate mood. A maggot in a bin of potatoes. A hand with painted nails silhouetted against the sky. A drug-addled girl sliding down a wall. Ramsey lets the music move the story. To evoke the right mood for a drug-hazed party scene, Ramsey threw a real bash for her cast and filmed them going wild. She then added audio and visual distortion to the final product.
I mean, it was important, that scene, for me, because she goes out, her boyfriend's dead on the floor, and she's almost in a state of shock, so the juxtaposition of these two things is quite important. So I wanted this kind of feeling of quite, you know, that she's very disorientated, and, you know, that party just was crazy.
You know, when you really love somebody, when you can sit on your own and not really say anything, you
you know?
Filmmaker Lynn Ramsey also adds realism to her work by using non-professional actors in some roles. Kathleen McDermott was a barber who had never acted before she took the role of Lana, who runs away to the rave scene in Spain with Morvern.
I mean, we could have been out clubbing it. Instead, we're surrounded by donkeys and cactus. What's wrong with you? What do you want? What planet are you on? Eh?
Much of the film doesn't have this kind of energy. It often moves along slowly, sometimes painfully slowly, much slower than the pace of Alan Warner's original book. But Warner appreciates the languor.
It's a pretty powerful and daring film. It's not going to speed up for the sake of the audience. You know, I thought it was very brave the way it's paced, because hopefully it becomes mesmerizing, which for me, it did become mesmerizing.
Morvern Kallar is Lynn Ramsey's second feature film. Her first, the critically acclaimed Ratcatcher, along with her award-winning short films, were enough to earn her a spot on a recent cover of the British Film Institute's Sight and Sound magazine. But her films are not crowd-pleasers, says Sight and Sound's editor Nick James. They require the audience to work.
It's a kind of contract you make with the film to sort of go with it. I mean, it's very much the kind of film where you walk in and you say, right, I'm going to go with this and see where it takes me. And it is one that really rewards that open-minded approach. Whereas if you go in there, you know, saying, come on, entertain me, then you're going to be disappointed.
James says the film has captured a generation of people who grew up with a Walkman almost wired into their bodies. Lynn Ramsey says Morvern personifies the 90s rave culture.
The whole thing about the generation, this generation which is, you know, take drugs and go out, and it's quite hedonistic. And it's not like the 70s anymore, where it was like political or about dropping out. You know, it's more just a pure hedonism. And I kind of saw her as this kind of product of this generation, but tried not to make her a kind of a moral judgment on her, but almost like a kind of, I don't know, an icon of that generation.
Morvern Kallar has been critically well-received, but Ramsey's next project will be attracting much more attention. She is adapting and directing Alice Sebold's The Lovely Bones, one of the best-selling novels of last year. In The Lovely Bones, the voice of another compelling young woman dominates, except this time, she's the one who is dead. Susan Stone, NPR News, Washington.
Each night before you go to bed.